Certainly nice to be here. Nice to be part of this wonderful celebration. I want to start with a joke. It was told to me by a Vermonter. And the question is, what is a Yankee? He said, well, you know, to the rest of the world, a Yankee is an American, someone from the United States. But, you know, in America, Americans think that a Yankee is a northerner. Well, if you're in the north, a Yankee will, the northerners will say, well, a Yankee is really from New England. If you're in New England, like I was at the time I heard the joke, they say, yeah, you know, a Yankee is from Vermont, a Vermonter. And this Vermonter said to me, you know, a Yankee is someone who would actually eat pie for breakfast. It's funny what language can do. It can somehow make things just a wee bit distant. It's not such a big problem in this joke, of course. I'd like to just kind of point out, though, a little bit of something that Mary Pfeiffer was writing in the UU World just a few years ago, that we can use words to make somebody into the other, a bit alien, not really like us. And in this story, you know, the Yankee is just not quite one of us, is he or her? And I lived in the North for many, many years as a Southerner, and I have to say, the opposite's true, too. I could even hear friends sometimes use disparaging comments that seemed to assume that Southerners were all a little bit dumber, a little bit more bigoted. Yankees, Southerners, they sometimes are a little bit the other to each other. They're a little bit different, a little bit alien, and not quite together. And sometimes it can be even worse than a little bit. You can hear the word damn Yankee. And I remember somebody telling me they, as a child, they thought that was one word. They didn't realize it was two words. The ideal neighbor, on the other hand, instead of this stranger idea that we pull up, the ideal neighbor is from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Apparently, Mr. Rogers grew up in such a neighborhood. And that person is the one who is kind, who reaches out like the Good Samaritan and takes care of the other, and there is no stranger. I think sometimes that children are better at this than the rest of us, that children don't really see strangers and that kind of other. I had an aunt who said about her grandson, you know, that boy doesn't know any strangers. Everybody he makes into a friend. And I think that we adults or older children are sometimes a little too busy being in, you know, glued to our screens of all kinds than being maybe outside the screen door and on the front porch where we might be really part of a neighborhood. I remember a long ago episode of a TV show, so this is not a new problem. It was called That Girl. I don't know how many people are that dated, but yeah. Marlo Thomas was an aspiring actress, and she got a special break one episode that she was going to be on a talk show, you know, a game show. And she found out sneakily that the questions were going to be about who are your neighbors. And, of course, she lived in an apartment building in a city. She didn't know her neighbors, so she spent those next few days getting ready by meeting everybody and doing nice things for them and storing up memories so that when she was on that game show, she could do real well. Well, she got on it, and the questions were about the neighbors from her childhood home, and she had to dredge up the story about the teacher, the librarian, the family down the street, the grocer, and She said, you know, I think I mixed up the names. It was hard, and it reminds us, I think, that we don't always know our neighbors. We're not, you know, we want to be neighbors. We're not always comfortable in that mode. This parable, the story that we heard from Jesus, it's asking at the beginning, the question is, and it is a lawyer who asks the loophole question, well, who is my neighbor? But actually, just before that, there was another question that he asked, and he really asked something about eternal life. What do I have to do to earn eternal life? And he had a certain idea in his mind of what that meant from his religious point of view in that time. We might be asking, you know, what do I need to do for well-being, for fullness of life? And Jesus answered the way probably a rabbi of his time would have answered. He said, Well, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. The great commandment of love, it's that simple. And the lawyer said, well, you know, love my neighbor. Okay, who is my neighbor? You know, who do I have to be nice to? Who do I have a duty to? Who do I have to love? And this is not just some kind of a loophole rhetorical question. In a way, there is in biblical language a lot about neighbors and strangers, and it's codified legal concepts. You actually were required to be nicer to neighbors than to strangers. The alien, the other, the stranger, they lived on a different plane in terms of the law. The neighbor, you actually needed to do more. So the lawyer is kind of asking, you know, is it the people in my town, you know, my neighborhood that I have to be a neighbor to, or maybe my region, or all of Israel, you know, or surely not beyond the border. Those people, they're scary, they're dangerous. They might be enemies. And so that question is kind of built in there. The parable, the story that Jesus tells as an answer is really surprising. And we may not hear as much of the surprise in it because we don't know all the things that it's got in it. So I'm going to tell you just a little bit. Now, first of all, you hear that a couple of people go by and don't do anything. And they're not the people that we think would go by and not do anything. They're the nice people. They're the minister. They're your minister. She just walked right on by. They are the leaders of the church. Walked right on by. And you hear that, and immediately the flags go up, and you go, okay, let me figure out a good excuse for that. They were busy. They had important things to do. When Martin Luther King Jr. talks about the Good Samaritan, when he did a sermon and included it, he said, you know, I bet they were going to a Jericho Road improvement meeting, and they were in a rush, and they had to get there, and, you know... We know that there might be reasons, because we know ourselves when we're not compassionate, we have good excuses, good reasons. And one of the reasons that we may not know about for the priest and the Levite is that they have to remain ritually clean, which meant a lot of things, including being washing, but other things. And one of the things you couldn't do is touch a dead body, and this lump in the ditch might have been dead and didn't know. So, of course, this excuse works more for one of them than the other. One of them has to stay ritually clean all the time or else clean himself in some special ways. The other one is going back from the temple, and he's actually off duty, and he doesn't have to stay clean anymore. But there's an other in the ditch, a stranger, someone you're not sure about, someone who might be dangerous. And any good excuse not to stop is there for the person. But I have to say, he's not really the stranger of the story, the one in the ditch. The stranger is really the Samaritan. The stranger is the person that, and sometimes we know this, but the Samaritan is a despised people that related, you know, but different, believes radically different, considered heretical to others who are who are the main religious people of the time. These Samaritans are different, and you don't really trust them. And so I always think, which groups hate each other the most? Well, they're often kind of like each other in some ways, related in some ways, and then maybe really different in their beliefs. And so I kind of thought about Jerry, the late Reverend Jerry Falwell, and he's from Virginia, right? And if he heard the story of the Good Samaritan, excuse me, what would he be thinking about? Well, he might be thinking, if he was really trying to figure it out, the priest who went by, that was Billy Graham. The Levite who went by, well, Pat Robertson, or maybe Mother Teresa. And who stopped? Who was in the ditch helping the person? Well, I might remind you of what he said right after September 11th. I hate this. I hate to bring something so nasty into a sacred space, but the minister said this: I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who have tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and I say, you helped this happen. What an abomination, he said. And if he were being honest with himself at the time, he would have had to say, who was his Samaritan? Probably somebody in this room, somebody from Virginia, from Williamsburg, somebody who might have believed differently, was maybe a feminist, a pagan, a lesbian. Okay, that's easy enough. What about for us? Who did we see walk by besides Jennifer? Maybe we saw Martin Luther King Jr. walk by, didn't stop to help. Who do we see hovering over the guy in the ditch to help? I'll let you fill in the blank. I hate to figure out who is the person you most think of as the other or the stranger. I'll just throw out one. Maybe it's the president of Syria, you know. That's what it sounded like when Jesus said this. That's how radical and strange and surprising this story was. Martin Luther King and Jennifer walked right on by, and the president of Syria helped the guy in the ditch who was hurt. Anybody can be a neighbor, and anybody can mess up and not be a neighbor, can not have the compassion drawn out of them. In a different Bible story, Jesus causes quite a scandal, and if you don't know this, he is pretty scandalous, Jesus. He's always doing things, getting him in trouble. And this time, it's also a Samaritan. He's at the well. He's not just talking about a Samaritan. He's drinking water with a Samaritan woman. And there's a few things that are strange about this. She's a woman alone. He's not supposed to stop and hang out with this woman alone. She's a woman who has a very colorful past. And even in today's society, people might not want to be seen with her. And she's a Samaritan. She is from a despised group. And what is he doing? He's drinking her water. He's asking about her life. He's telling her things to help guide her to make some good decisions in her life. And he has become a neighbor to this person that he really was supposed to treat as a stranger, as an alien, in every civilized way that you would have thought of. So who represents the stranger for you? Who could you have the living waters with? Who could, well, you're not going to go to a well, I'm sure, but maybe you're going to go to a cafe and have a cappuccino. Maybe you're going to go to a pub and have a beer. Who is so different from you, and yet you could imagine yourself interacting with them over, you know, as Jennifer said, the living waters that we honor and that we symbolize, as, you know, the stuff that we're all made of. Who are we going to meet with? When a stranger is despised, he or she tends to avoid the despisers, at least for reasons of safety and dignity, and probably also because despising goes both ways. You know, it's on either side. In Jesus' story, the Samaritan should not have stopped. You know, he was taking a risk. He wasn't just being compassionate. He could have been beaten up by the next Jewish guy who went by because he was doing something wrong. He was crossing a boundary that was very strong, a cultural divide. He didn't stop. He trespassed. He turned a stranger into a neighbor. He helped. And perhaps it's at least a little bit because he himself was that stranger. He knew that woundedness of someone who is avoided, who is despised, who is cast aside as the other. And out of that woundedness, he was able to help someone who was wounded. We don't often hear stories about heroes who are strangers for us, who are the good person doing the good thing. We might hear about, you know, a hero who helps someone who is a stranger. You know, the person in the ditch is a down-and-out kind of person, and some really good person, leader, came along and helped out and did the good thing. But Jesus liked to tell stories that shook you up. He, I believe, in many ways, like the Buddha, he was trying to wake people up. And this is one of those times when he's just trying to wake you up. He's telling it in the most surprising way that he can. And he wants you to notice that this is the wrong person helping, just like the wrong people went by. But I'm going to tell you another story like this, a 20th century true story about strangers and neighbors. That someone I had met, a homeless woman in Boston. This is not the story you expect. I'm not the good Samaritan helping out that poor, skinny, homeless woman in Boston. Actually, she's helping me out. So how does that work? My goodness. I was working at her shelter, at her home, Rosie's Place, it was called. And it was just a horrible night. I think every time I ever volunteered there, it was a horrible night. There were never enough beds. There was always problems and difficulties to be surmounted. And in the midst of this crisis, for which I, as a 21-year-old, was really not equipped, it was really too much for me, this one homeless woman decided to just take me downstairs to the basement. She had something for me. I don't know why I went down with her, but there was this room down there that had the donated clothing for the women of the shelter. Of course, that clothing belonged to the women of the shelter. I would have never gone down there and gotten clothes for myself, but she wanted to give me something. So she, the skinny homeless woman, turned with compassion to the needy recent Harvard graduate who was not dressed very well. Let me tell you, it wasn't because I didn't have enough funds, although I didn't have much money then. It was because I was just plain slouchy. And she picked out in one box a pair of pants, and over here in a bag, a shirt, matching perfectly, fit me perfectly, brought out my color. It was really what I imagined going to a high-end clothing shop would be like, somebody selecting the clothing for you, something I'm not good at all. And more importantly, of course, she thought about my needs. She ministered to them, and I went upstairs being taken care of and able to then go back into the fray and be okay. Now, when Jesus talks about the Samaritan as a good guy, or when I talk about the homeless woman as the compassionate one, it's a reversal. And we tend to think of that stranger, that alien, that other, as a person to whom we should be decent and nice, and maybe we have a few codified concepts, or at least we think, you know, there are things we ought to do. We almost want a pat on the back for being nice, but we maintain a separateness. You know, we had to be nice to them who needed somebody to be nice to them. And a neighbor is actually just someone who is nice, right? Someone who does something good. Years ago, I took a church youth group, high school kids, on a field trip, a couple of field trips, to a detention center, boys who had broken the law. And we brought adult chaperones with us, very meaningful field trips. And after the first one of the chaperones, an older woman, came up to me and she said, "You know, I didn't realize I was prejudiced against these young people until I was with them. And I realized, you know, they're human beings. They're just like us. And I, you know, I was glad to be able to do something good for them." And she felt good, you know, and that was really wonderful. After the second field trip, the same woman had a deeper revelation, because at that field trip, one of the boys, these lawbreaker boys, helped her physically, mentally, emotionally, helped her in some way. I forgot what it was, but she was blown away. She was humbled and amazed. And she said, "You know," after which, when she talked to me, she said, this is totally different. I now know that, you know, he's good and I'm good." And I forget how she said it, but it was very much an understanding of they were both compassionate neighbors to each other, and the stranger had completely disappeared from the mix. What a blessing. It didn't take long for her to change a stranger into a neighbor. I think sometimes it can happen instantaneously. I think of those times when a disaster strikes a neighborhood, and maybe they weren't neighbors before, but they become a community on the spot because they have to. And why does it take that? Why can't we just really realize we actually are all relatives? We all do belong to each other. We all are one people. A neighbor is not someone defined by attributes or an address, but by the way that they reach out and care for each other. A neighbor is someone who approaches the world with radical inclusiveness. I believe that's what Jesus was trying to demonstrate in that story. I believe that's part of what's at the heart of Unitarian Universalism, a radical inclusiveness that says everyone can be the neighbor. I know, we get sidetracked like everybody else. Sometimes we get feeling our own strangeness, our own alienation, loneliness. We notice we're different. Everybody in this room is different. You might be, oh my goodness, a Christian, or a humanist, or a pagan, or a Buddhist, or Jewish, or what else? We got them all, right? Or you might be someone who's different from the rest of the folks in some way that isn't real easy to figure out. Maybe it's your economic situation, and maybe it's your living situation, and maybe it's your health, and maybe it's your politics, and whatever it is, we can feel strange, even in our blessed, beloved communities, even in our families. We can start to feel like the stranger. We can feel like other people out there are sure strange indeed, and it can get in the way of being a neighbor, of being kind, of having those acts of compassion flow. We belong to each other. We belong as neighbors. All of our varieties, we belong. Even those who would eat pie for breakfast, we belong. Sometimes we're going to meet in that ditch of suffering. Sometimes we're going to meet over the living waters. We belong together. As Mr. Rogers said, won't you be my neighbor every week? Won't you be my neighbor every day, I guess. The question helps us to notice that neighborliness is both an invitation and a choice. You know, we can anybody, any of us, anybody can be a neighbor to anybody else. So may we be neighbors always. Amen.